Everyone, I'm Beatty Confredos, and welcome again, my friends, to the Ask Beatty Show. And it's really amazing, and I say this every single week, that when I hear my intro music, I am catapulted into a really wonderful, positive, lovely place. And it was just about an hour ago, I had this very, very frustrating meeting, and I was feeling angry, and I was feeling upset until I found a way to rectify what had actually gone on or not gone on during this meeting. And yet when I hear the music, I feel calm, I feel relaxed. And what is the takeaway for all of us? Well, whether or not it is music, whether or not it is dancing, whether or not it may be a glass of orange juice or a mineral water, I think that we all need to find ways to de-stress, to deal with stress, and to do the things that are really, really in our best interest, regardless of what is or is not going on in our lives, so that it really comes back to us. And as all of you know, I am a psychotherapist and a sex therapist, and I am the author of the groundbreaking book. I'm so proud of this book. I wish I had had this book for myself when I began my own dating life many, many years ago. The book is For Better, For Worse, Forever: Discover the Path to Lasting Love. And I had done research a number of years ago with 450 people. And as a result of the research, I devised a 10-step formula that teaches us all how to assess who is right for you and who is wrong for you before. Yes, before, not after, but before committing to any serious relationship. Because the fact of the matter is we all know that we're really not doing all that well at all when it comes to our relationships and love and romance and hopes and dreams. I mean, as wonderful and as romantic as all those things are, those are not the things long-term that are going to help us to assess and evaluate who is actually right and who also may be wrong for us. So again, the book is For Better, For Worse, Forever: Discover the Path to Lasting Love. I am also the columnist for Dan's newspapers in the Hamptons, and I'm writing two Ask Beatty columns every single week. And you can actually read the columns online, just going by to Dan's newspapers online and Googling Ask Beatty. So hopefully, if you're not able to actually find the hard copy magazines, you're going to be able to read all of my different columns and advice online in Dan's newspapers. And I'm also a national speaker. And of course, I've been in national radio and television for a very, very long time. And I have a private practice here in New York City and also in East Hampton. So what is the Ask Beatty Show really all about? I have been doing the Ask Beatty Show here on the Progressive Radio Network since 2013, and I don't think I've missed even one week. And the show is really about empowerment. And we talk about relationships, and we talk about sexuality and mental health issues. And the bottom line is that we all need to figure out for ourselves what we need to actually do. And the key word here is do, not just think, not just hope, about how to maximize our physical, our emotional, our relational well-being, despite the stressors in our lives. And of course, my mantra is acknowledge and address and resolve as best as we can the things that do get in the way of our being able to live a joyful and happy life, recognizing, of course, that we cannot change our history. Because when we look at what's going on in the country, we have very high, significant levels of depression. In fact, 17 million adults in the United States suffer from clinical depression. We're looking at very high, high suicide rates. And in fact, the suicide rates between adults 18 to 65, that happens to be the fourth leading cause of death for adults in our country. We're looking at a divorce rate, 48% of first marriages end in divorce, 67% of second marriages also end in divorce. And for third marriages, you know, one would hope that we've actually learned something, but the reality is that 74% of couples who are marrying for the third time, they too are finding themselves in a courtroom in front of a judge. And statistics that really concern me a lot are what's going on with teenage dating violence. Nearly 1 in 11 females and approximately 1 in 14 male high school students report having experienced physical dating violence in the last year. So, you know, what I feel is so important is that we need to educate ourselves. We need to educate ourselves about relationships. We need to educate ourselves about good mental health, and that we don't need to navigate. We don't need to navigate life stressors on our own. And if you find that your life is really on a roller coaster ride and that you are depressed or anxious and that you are not able to really live life in the moment, the very best thing, and I hope that I have been successful in convincing you after all of these years, is that the very best thing that we can all do is reach out and ask for help. And as you know, Gary Null reminds us every single day about the things that we actually have control over. We don't have control over what's going to be happening in the government. We don't have control over on a daily basis about daily crime. But what we do have control over is how we are able to treat ourselves. And of course, he talks a lot about the importance of plant-based diets and fruits and vegetables and grains and herbs and supplements and eating well. And these are things that we actually can do on a daily basis to maximize our physical and also our emotional health. And of course, I talk a lot about the importance of exercise and weight training and yoga and meditation, things that help us calm ourselves during very hectic days and weeks and months. And of course, also the importance of having supportive people in our life. In fact, a patient of mine, she actually texted me this a couple of days ago, and she says, a reminder to say no to the things, people, and places that steal our joy. And again, that's something that we do have control over, because the reality is that we cannot change anybody else. We can hope and we can wish and we can try and we can fantasize that perhaps something that we can do or something that we can say will make a difference in other people in terms of how they behave and how they treat us. And the fact is that that is simply not the case. What we can do is make sure that we are on top of our own game, and that we do not allow anybody to cross over certain boundary lines. And I know that's sometimes very difficult to do, especially if we're talking about family and close friends. And yet, you know, in the realization that the only people that we can actually change is ourselves. I think that's something that's very, very powerful. And yes, it takes a lot of work in order for us to be able to pivot to a better place, but at least we know that if we make the effort, sometimes with and without help, that we will be able to succeed in at least making sure that we are living our lives in ways that are in our best interest. And in fact, that's really the homework that I give every single patient, regardless of what the issues are that they are in therapy with me to deal with, for all of us to be mindful. Are we being good to ourselves as we navigate our days? Are we eating well? Are we interacting well? Are we making sure that we are eliminating toxicity and toxins on every single level, whether or not we're talking about toxins in our food or whether or not we are talking about toxic people? It is on us. And I have the confidence in all of us that with a little bit of work, and sometimes it's going to take more than a little bit of work, that we will be able to become mindful in ways that will be good for us across the board. You know, so I'm asking you a question right now. Today it is 3:10 in New York City. Have you been good to yourself since you woke up this morning? Meaning, did you have a good night's sleep? Did you go to bed at a proper time? Did you have a well-balanced breakfast this morning? Have you managed perhaps to take a walk? Are you eliminating spending every single moment in front of a screen? What have you actually done today that is in your best interest? And on the other hand, since the beginning of the morning, have you been engaging in activities, in behaviors, in interactions with other people that may very well be destructive or self-destructive or self-sabotaging? And I think it's a really important thing that we all do on a regular basis to actually take the pulse of how we are doing, of how we are living on a day-to-day basis when it comes to our nutrition, when it comes to our interactions, when it comes to exercise. And if you're finding, you see, this is the whole thing. If you are finding that you are off track, that things are not going as well as you would hope, that you are not, in fact, satisfied with yourself and the quality of your life and relationships, you know, the next step then is for you with or without help, because sometimes it's really difficult to do this on our own. You need to also ask yourself the question or the questions of what do you actually feel is standing in the way of your happiness and your personal goals. And I think it's a question that all of us really need to ponder. What is it? What is it that has gotten us into a place in our lives where we're just not living? We're not living in the way or ways that we were hoping to live a happy and joyful life. And of course, the next question then becomes, if you are unsure why you're unhappy, why you're not meeting your goals, why you're walking around depressed or anxious, the question then is, are you willing to find out? So that's question number three. And of course, question number four is, if and when you discover the challenges facing you, whether or not it's unfinished business from your family of origin, whether or not it's psychiatric issues like depression or anxiety or substance abuse of various different kinds, or early child sexual abuse or sexual assault. I mean, there's a variety of different issues and problems that affect people. So the real question, of course, then becomes, are you willing to do the work and acknowledge and address and resolve as best as you can the issues and the problems and the challenges that are really keeping you from enjoying life? Because over the years, I mean, I've discovered that the majority of people who are genuinely happy with their lives, it's not the rich and the famous and the beautiful, nor were they the people who were actually immune from life's traumas and tragedies. In fact, what I have found is that there is only one primary difference between people who wake up every morning thankful to be alive, looking forward to the day ahead, and people who are embittered about life, who may be caught in a downward spiral of depression, anxiety, abuse of various different kinds, or other psychiatric problems. The latter group, okay, the first group, they tend to complain. We're always complaining and moaning about their difficulties and disappointments. Well, the so-called happy group acknowledges, addresses, and makes every possible effort to resolve their problems, whatever they may be. And it is this group, of course, these are the people that I see who seek professional help when necessary and who are willing and ready, even though it is difficult, to tackle their problems head on. And for me, regardless of the issues, regardless of the problems that bring people into therapy with me, I look at these people as the mentally and emotionally healthy ones. These are the people who I see in my office every single day. You are my heroes. They are the men and women, young and old, single and married, divorced and widowed, gay and straight and trans, who made a decision to finally put their, what I call, skeletons in the closet and unfinished business in a better place. And happily, most of my patients succeed beyond their wildest dreams and expectations and are able to live happier and joyful lives. So again, you know, the complaining and the moaning and the upset that so frequently, it just embodies people. It paralyzes us. And it doesn't help us at all to alleviate the problems that continue to really fester within ourselves. So again, if you are suffering from depression or anxiety or loneliness, or whether or not you may have a lot of unfinished business skeletons in your closet, you know, from your past, you have a decision that you need to make. And there are people who decide to do absolutely nothing and live their lives out in very disappointing and embittered ways. So when you think about it, what are the consequences of not stepping up to the plate to deal with one's demons? Think about that. Because in my practice, the majority of people who enter therapy have had a variety of physical problems, including insomnia and, of course, depression, high blood pressure, panic attacks, migraines, gastrointestinal problems, high cholesterol, back problems, aches and pains and ulcers and colitis and a variety of other problems. And they almost all had relationship problems as well. But when my patients began to give themselves permission to finally deal with their psychic pain, the majority really began to feel much better, not only emotionally, but physically as well. So my view, of course, and my experience is that keeping a stiff upper lip is a sure recipe for disaster. Because if we continually stuff our emotions, these unexpressed feelings, they will surely find, and they do find, a place to lodge somewhere within our body. So I'm hoping every single week I go through the same process, the same kind of discussion, and I'm hoping, and this is where I wish I could see all of you as you were listening to the show, whether or not there is some little thing that I have said that would actually motivate and inspire you to finally, once and for all, give yourself permission to deal with your unfinished business. You know, I'm thinking of a patient that I was treating over the summer, and she actually recently graduated from therapy. Let's call her Barbara. Barbara, 67 years old, grew up in a very physically and emotionally abusive home in the Midwest. Her mother was bipolar. She had a borderline personality. She was in and out of hospital, and Barbara was beaten virtually every day, either emotionally or physically, by her mother. Well, her father sat back and let the whole thing go on. So he was absolutely no use and no help to Barbara in any way at all. Well, Barbara married. She married when she was 20 years old and had a child, a little girl. Well, guess who Barbara married? Well, Barbara married not a version of her father, but a replica, a duplicate, a carbon copy of her mother. So she ends up, Barbara ends up, consciously, unconsciously, and of course, it was really on an unconscious basis. She was hoping, of course, to never repeat what went on in her own family of origin. So she married a man who hit her, who beat her, who was emotionally, psychologically, physically, and sexually very, very abusive. Now, here she is. She's 20 years old, and she has a little girl. Well, it took about 7 years, and Barbara told me that she finally was able to save some money, and she finally was able to leave the marriage. So Barbara moved from California to the Hamptons in New York State. And she was a single parent. She was trying to find her way in her business. She is an interior designer. And after a couple of years, Barbara meets a man. She meets a man who's about 15 years older than her. He is suave. He is sophisticated. He is sexy, according to Barbara. And, you know, over and above that, he was actually willing to accept the fact that she had a little girl. So they went together for a couple of years. They traveled. He was well-to-do. He was sophisticated. And there were signs. He was also very controlling and would put her in her place. But Barbara was in love. Well, they got married and the abuse began. The physical abuse, the emotional abuse. He cheated on her with multiple women over the years. They had a child together, And Barbara was really at her wits' end about what she could do. So she went from her abusive family of origin to her abusive first husband. And now she finds herself in yet another abusive marriage. Well, Barbara was married for almost 25 years. And this past summer, I was giving a lecture at the East Hampton Library. And she saw there was an ad for the talk that I was going to be giving, which was my Never Make a Mistake in Love Again presentation based on my research and based on my book, For Better, For Worse, Forever, Discover the Path to Lasting Love. Now, what prompted Barbara to contact me? I'm not exactly sure. I do know that she was in a lot of psychic pain. She'd put on a lot of weight. She was physically not feeling well. She was drinking too much. And she had been in therapy, actually, with a variety of different therapies off and on for a number of years. So I met Barbara, and she was hoping, and she told me during that first session that she was just the idea was is that I would fix her very quickly, and that she would go off into the sunset because at this time she and her second husband were divorced. But Barbara was an amazing student. We began at the beginning, which of course is where I always began. And Barbara was able to really see that she went from her abusive childhood and went straight in to another abusive relationship and then a second marriage because it felt familiar. It was something that she actually was in quotes comfortable with. It didn't feel strange because it actually was not strange. Barbara was not used to having significant people in her life treat her well. So she spent years trying to make herself look prettier and slimmer and tried to be what she described as the perfect, perfect wife, hoping that all of the things that she was trying to do and that she was doing was going to help her husbands, her first husband, and also her second husband, who was really a replica of her mother and her first husband, that maybe they would love her, that maybe they would start to treat her better if she was only thinner and if she cooked better and if she was just again the perfect 50s wife. Well, obviously, that did not happen because if we are waiting for other people to change, we are going to be waiting for a very, very long time. And when I met Barbara, she was, and not to be surprised, in another abusive relationship. This was not a physically or sexually abusive relationship, but this was a relationship with a man where Barbara felt she was always on a roller coaster ride. They would spend time together. He would disappear. He would cheat on her. He would come back. He would apologize. And this went on, this relationship actually went on for about 8 years. So during all of the time that Barbara and I spent together, I actually started to see her in April of this past year. Barbara started to realize and to take some personal responsibility. I mean, obviously, as a child, I mean, we don't get to choose our parents, to take some personal responsibility in realizing her own pattern of choosing men that were going to hurt her and did hurt her, just like her mother and just like her father. So last week, and it was really exciting, she came into my office in East Hampton and she announced that she had broken off with her 8 year old boyfriend and that she had some clarity and that she was no longer afraid to be alone. And she realized on a very, very deep level the abusive pattern, again, beginning in her childhood, that she became very, very used to. And these days, and I'm so proud of her that she is able to set boundaries for friends, to set boundaries for family members. And she has a sense of herself that she has never ever had before. And this took some work. This was several months, weekly sessions, 2-hour sessions at a time. And, you know, Barbara was telling me that she would leave my office and she would literally go home and either want to throw up or go to sleep. And sometimes she did both. But the fact of the matter is she stuck to the treatment plan, and I have a lot of confidence in Barbara moving forward that she will never, ever make a mistake in love again. She understands now that she is really okay, that she is not responsible for what happened to her when she was a child, that she was not responsible for having married these abusive men because she had never really sorted out really the dynamic of what was going on. And so she graduated, and she left my office over the weekend with a smile on her face. And I am so, so proud of her. And for all the people that I treat who are really willing to do the hard work. And the work is hard and it is painful, but, you know, like they say in the world of sports, you know, no pain, no gain. And so again, if you're finding yourself that you're in a state, in this constant state of either angst or depression or anxiety, or you're finding that you're going from one relationship to another and that they all end up pretty much the same, that you're either with abusive people or people who are unavailable to you emotionally or physically or sexually, you know, it's time for all of us to wake up. Because again, I want to really underscore that if we are waiting for other people to change, we might wait a lifetime, and it is probably not going to happen, which is why. And I think that what I'm going to say may surprise some of you when I'm looking at the world of domestic violence. I mean, 3 women are killed every single day by their so-called partner. And when I talk to people, to experts in the field, and I'm also an expert in the field of domestic violence, the conversations usually go something like, well, the laws need to be more stringent, the police need to be much more aware of what's going on so that they're not going to be putting women who report in yet a more difficult situation than they've already been in, you know, in living with somebody who is abusive to them. And I think that it's very easy to look at the external resources and external system to try to help to resolve the very, very serious of domestic violence statistics in our country. And I agree. I agree completely that laws need to be changed and men need to learn how to better respect women, and that abuse must never be tolerated on any level by anyone. But my perspective, again, is somewhat different. I feel very, very strongly that we have, that each of us, if we're talking about women and abuse, that we have a personal responsibility to empower ourselves with knowledge. So when I talk about, and when I do my Never Make a Mistake in Love Again presentations, there are 3 different things that I have discovered over the years that women need to do, not just to think about, to do, to never make a mistake in love again, just like my patient Barbara. And the very, very first thing is not looking at the laws. The very first thing is looking at ourselves, because each of us needs to be in a really good place emotionally and psychologically if we are ever going to be able to have a successful relationship with anyone. The relationship, that needs to be the icing on the cake. We need to be the cake. We need to be solid. We need to be okay. And when we are okay, and when we have dealt with our own issues, our current issues, and our past issues, we are going to have clarity. We are going to have clarity about who we let into our lives. And that's number one. And number two, we all need to do a much, much better job, if we're looking for love, and actually learn the ingredients and go into a successful relationship. I mean, relationship education, I wish that that was part and parcel of our children's curriculum beginning in the first grade level, so that kids have clarity, that we are clear about what behavior is okay, what behavior is not okay, what happens if people step over certain boundary lines, so that we are clear. And unfortunately, the majority of people are not clear. And number three, of course, is my book and my formula, For Better, For Worse, Forever, Discover the Path to Lasting Love. It is the assessment format, for actually evaluating who is good for us and who is not good for us. And, you know, it's interesting that before I did my research and before the book came out, I would, in my own personal life, I would meet people and I would say, I met a lovely woman, or I met a lovely man, and I met somebody who seems, you know, trustworthy and kind and good. And after doing the research, it was so clear to me that I would be a fool if I were to utter those kinds of statements about somebody that I didn't really know. And these days, and of course, these years, the book came out in the first edition in 1998, the best I could say, and the best that you could say, is that we've met somebody who appears to be kind and trustworthy and gentle and lovely. And what my research found, of course, is that it takes about a year to really find out who somebody is and isn't, and that we really cannot fast forward the process. Now, obviously, if you're seeing a lot of red flags, you know, abuse of any kind, you're not going to stay in a relationship for, you know, for a year. But when you go through this process, I mean, the great thing about it is that we have clarity, and that we are educated, and that we are empowered with information. And as a result of that, we are able to keep ourselves safe, which is really what this is all about, safe physically and safe emotionally. You know, so that I hope that I have convinced you about the importance that we all have work to do, and the smart people, the brave people, they are willing to take the steps, the difficult steps of looking inward, of being introspective, and finally, and maybe once and for all, taking care of business that continues to get in the way of their life and relationships. So I'm hoping that this is motivational. I know it probably sounds very preachy, but I do hope that it is inspirational and motivational. And if you're sitting at home right now, or maybe at your office, and you're listening to the Ask Beanie Show, that there's something that I have said that maybe will trigger an aha moment within you that you will take that really important step to do what you need to do so that you can live a happier and more joyful life. Well, there was an article in the New York Times, the Modern Love column, yesterday, December the 5th, 2021. The headline, "Not Another Nicely Packaged Pain Delivery System." So this is about a woman. She says, "I was 67, and the woman who she was interested in was also 67. And she says, knowing as much as she needed to know about what wine, she had not joined the class until the talk turned to reds. I had been there through the talk about whites and the sessions on bubbles, and now I was ready for red." So what does this have to do with anything? Well, she met a woman in the class. And this was a potential person who she thought initially that she might want to really get to know. The woman's name was Sarah. But the writer of this column, Judith Federley, okay, she's gay. This is what she says. All right, so she's excited. She meets Sarah. She's attracted to Sarah. They start to go out and have some wine together and spend some time together. And this is what she says. "My excitement was followed by such disappointment." Okay. "Only one thing I recognized is that I was falling in love." Well, she didn't really know her, but she was feeling those feelings. She goes on to say, "I was terrified. I did not consider myself." Now, here we go again about the importance of getting our own act together. She says, "I did not consider myself to be a candidate for love. I was damaged goods." This is what she is saying about herself. "Discarded some years earlier by my partner of 17 years who left me for a younger woman, Judy." Okay, I had gotten the message. Okay, this is the message that this was her takeaway after her former lover left her after 17 years. "I wasn't lovable and didn't deserve to be treated well." From the carnage, I had also deciphered another message. "I had trusted her completely and had been utterly mistaken. I thought I knew who would be faithful and true. Wrong. I thought I knew who would be good for me and to me. Wrong again. I thought I was a person capable of keeping a long-term relationship going. Again, wrong. In the matter of intimate relationships, it was obvious that I couldn't be trusted to choose wisely or well." Now, here is a woman, and I see many, many women and some men like this, talk about beating herself up. Oh, my God. She says, "My forays into the world of Match.com and Lesbian Love Finder had only reinforced my sense that intimate relationships were no longer possible for me." She had the whole story. She had her whole future in her mind really carved out and in the most negative way. "If I felt even the slightest stirring of attraction, I flinched, convinced that I had encountered yet another nicely packaged pain delivery system. I couldn't trust others and I couldn't trust myself." It's like she took this stick and was beating herself up over and over and over again. Well, she continues, and this is interesting. She's blaming herself. She is unlovable. She is a mess, according to her. So she and Sarah continue to see each other. And she was attracted to Sarah. She was enjoying her company. But the subject of where are we at? You know, is this a relationship? Is this just a friendship? That was something that was interesting when I read this.
Not only did Judith not bring this topic up or subject up, but Sarah also. They were both pretty complacent in not wanting to address where is this relationship, in quotes, at. So inwardly, you know, she's churning because she really is finding herself more and more reasons that she would like to have a relationship with Sarah. So what does she do? What does she do? She asks her friends. She said, what do you basically think? Do you think that there is something there, something significant there with Sarah? So when she asked her friends, okay, no one could find any sign of her feeling, you know, anything really positive toward her other than just being a good friend. And one of her friends, and I think probably the only friend who had something of value to say, was, why don't you actually ask her? You're going to have to do something. The quote is, butch up, baby, and tell her how you feel. And this is after a year and a half that these two women were, you know, enjoying a friendship. So finally what happens, Judith, after a year and a half, she decides that she is going to write a letter to Sarah, and she is going to let her know how she really feels. She wanted her to be clear about her feelings, but she felt that she had to give her a graceful way to refuse her invitation. All right. So this is after a year and a half. So she finally puts this letter. She wrote the letter. She put the letter in the mail. And who knew? Who knew what was going to happen? Well, she finally gets a call from Sarah. So this is the quote. When Sarah called that evening, she called to say yes. She called to say yes. And Jennifer was saying she did not expect to find love again, and certainly not so late in life. And experts on aging trumpet falling as our greatest danger. But what about the danger of not falling? Okay. And she goes on to say, of course, my skin will go to bumps and scabs and brown spots. And of course, my hands will cramp with arthritis. But if they are clasped by Sarah's own, I can face whatever comes. So what are the lessons to be learned here? So initially, she spent years and years beating herself up, trying to convince herself that she was not lovable, that she would never find love, that there was something very damaged about her. And finally, she got the courage. She got the chutzpah to be able to let this woman, Sarah, know how she was feeling. And she told Sarah what it was, not only that what she was feeling, but what it was that she wanted. And I think that is the lesson. That was really, I read this article several times. That was my takeaway. And the takeaway is that we have to ask for what we want. Now, there's absolutely no guarantee that in asking for what we want, that we're always going to get what we want. That is for sure. But there is a guarantee. And the other guarantee is that if we do not ask for what we want, the guarantee is that we are not going to get it. So again, I am going to ask you all the question. Are there any people in your life, whether it's in business or in your social relationships, where you have something to say, but that you're really reluctant to say it,
whether it's asking for a raise or whether it's asking about the status of our relationship. Do you have any unfinished business with people where you need to really declare your feelings toward them or asking them where they are at in terms of you, either as an employee or as a potential girlfriend or boyfriend or lover? So the homework, you see, I give patients homework every single hour. So the homework that I want to give you is that if there are people in your life who you need to declare your feelings to, or you need to get some clarification in terms of where they are at in relation to you, the homework is that you are going to do this. Again, there are no guarantees that when we ask for what we want, that we are going to get it. But again, the guarantee for not asking for what we want, I think, is pretty clear. It is not going to happen. So that is your homework for today. I promised you, in fact, this is the last couple of weeks, and there's been so many other things that have come up that I wanted to discuss on the show. I really want to talk about my unique approach in doing effective marriage counseling, because many people do believe that successful marriage counseling, that it is a hit and miss proposition. But what I have found over the past 35 years is that the majority of couples, and I work with a lot of couples of all ages and backgrounds, that the majority of couples that I have treated have had successful outcomes largely because of a unique, tried and true methodology that I have developed. And I'm going to go through this very quickly. And I promise you next week, I'm going to start the show in talking about my unique approach in doing effective marriage counseling. But first of all, there needs to be a very in-depth couples evaluation. And my couples evaluation usually lasts several hours. I really need to know right from the beginning, you know, when everything was wonderful, what happened? And I need to hear from both people. That's number one. Number two, and when I talk about some case histories next week, you'll know why this second really part is of the assessment process is so critical. And the second part is that I do individual assessments. I need to see the people individually. I need to find out about who they are. I need to find out whether one or both have their own individual issues that are either causing or contributing to the couple difficulties. And what I have found is that if one or both have significant psychological or psychiatric problems, these need to be dealt with first on an individual basis, because it is not possible to successfully treat a couple's problems when one or both individuals are suffering from their own significant unfinished business, or as I call them, the skeletons in the closet. So that is why the first session, yes, it's a couple session. The second time I meet with the people, it's so that I meet with them individually. And once couple counseling really is you know, we're at a place where people are able to really focus on the couple, I'm going to go into a lot of detail with you exactly about what actually goes on behind closed doors when I start to meet with the couple as, you know, and myself as a threesome, because then we're really able to focus on the we issues. So there's going to be a lot to talk about, because I don't know how many of you who are in a relationship or who are married have ever been in marital therapy.
And it can be pretty dicey and painful and difficult. But if marital therapy is done in, and I think in a really effective way, it's absolutely amazing the transformation that can occur between, you know, two people who are really serious about doing the work. And of course, you need a really good guide, a really, really good couples therapist who can really guide the process. So again, if you're looking to find a couple therapist, just like looking to find anybody, you need to do a really good assessment and of course get a referral from somebody that you trust. So what I'm going to talk about in depth next week is exactly what goes on in couples counseling in Bidicombe Bredos's private practice here in New York City and in the Hamptons. So again, it's amazing where the time goes. You know, there's so much to talk about. And by the way, I really welcome your comments and your questions. And of course, you can always go to my bdcone.com website for lots of information about me and other ways that you can actually contact me. So again, I want to thank you all so much for tuning in and listening to the Ask BD show every week. And I want to leave you with my two weekly messages. And I hope that I have, you know, convinced you that the most important thing that we can all do, that if we want to live joyful and happy lives as individuals and also have happy relationships, is that each of us needs to be in a good place and we need to find ways, whatever ways we find, to respect ourselves and to love ourselves. And of course, the second most important thing, if we're going to be happy living in a world, you know, where there is connectedness and goodness, that we all need to do and find much, much, much better ways to love each other. So again, I want to thank you so much for tuning in, and I will talk with you next week and every week, every Monday afternoon live from 3 to 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. So have a very, very good rest of the day. Be well, love yourself, love each other, and I will talk with you next week. Bye-bye, everybody.